everyone. It's wonderful to be with you. That was just the crickets music we just heard for the last few minutes, which some of you may be aware of. It's the music that is supposedly available to us to hear if we slow down the sound of crickets by a proportion that is equal to their lifespan in relationship to the human lifespan. That's the percent proportion, and then you slow down the music at that proportion, and it sounds like that, supposedly. Slow it down and then raise up the frequency. But anyway, it's beautiful, isn't it, to hear perhaps the crickets celebrating their lives. And I think it's good to remember that in many ways all the animals of this earth are celebrating their lives on this beautiful planet. Thank you all for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are gathering here today, this evening, for the World Peace Diet Circle for October of 2014. This is October 16th, 2014, and we are just delighted to have this opportunity to ask questions or respond to questions or go more deeply into the ideas of the World Peace Diet and the underlying ideas of veganism and spirituality and how we can create a society and a culture, a human civilization on this planet that is actually worthy of this beautiful Earth. Because I think what we're discovering as we get closer and closer to, it seems to be a reckoning, a day of reckoning here on planet Earth, that we must make an evolutionary leap so that we can actually demonstrate that we're worthy of this beautiful planet, and to stop destroying things here and stop being a force for terror and devastation, and be a force for celebration and creativity and spiritual awakening and harmony and peace. And I really think it's possible. It just means questioning the mentality that's been injected to all of us by our society, primarily through the meals and the routine and relentless mistreatment of animals for food and other products. So just to be aware, if you would like to say something, ask a question, or contribute something, you are totally encouraged to do so in this time that we have together. Press *6 on your phone, and I will be able to see that you have raised your hand, and I'll be able to unmute your phone here. This is an unusual session for Madeline and me, because this evening here in Northern California, there is a screening of the film Cowspiracy, and I was asked to do the Q&A afterwards with Keegan. Do you remember Keegan? I think he was on last month. He's the co-producer of the new documentary film Cowspiracy, which I hope you've all had a chance to see. It'll be coming out in DVD, I think, within the next, I think November 5th is when it's supposed to come out on DVD. But it'll be available then easily. But anyway, Keegan and I will be, in a couple of hours actually, leading a Q&A session at the Cine Arts Theater in Sausalito, California. So Madeline and I have driven down in our old, we don't use it that much, but we're starting to use it again more, 1971 Volkswagen bus, which has been kind of fixed up here. And I'm sitting right now inside our Volkswagen bus. We have a little desk in there. We're parked in the driveway of a woman who lives in Mill Valley, who we met at the San Francisco Veg Fest last week, a few days ago, this past weekend, who has said we could hook up our computer to her Wi-Fi, and I have the cell phone too. So we're very mobile here this evening. We're in someone's driveway. Madeline created an absolutely delicious meal for us to bring on the road, which we will have YouTube videos of it up before too long, because we videotaped the whole thing, because it's really, I think it's really fun to do this. It's a zucchini strudel we just had, which I'm amazed how delicious. We have so much zucchini in our garden, so we have, you know, zucchini, plum, what was it called? Strudel. We called it as a, if you just go to YouTube and go to the Will Tuttle channel, you'll see it. Madeline has a channel there with lots of recipes. We're putting up more that are all vegan and organic and simple. But anyway, so we just shot a video of her making this zucchini strudel, which is really delicious. And then also we made a video of her creating a vegan apple pie, which she's also brought some of that with her too, with us. So we just had a little of the zucchini strudel. It's really amazing. She rolls it up like a in a roll, and it's so moist, and I can't tell you how delicious it is. And the apple pie too. So anyway, so we're actually well fed here, and we're in the driveway, and we're hooked up, and things seem to be working. So that's great. I hope they're working. I mean, if they're not working, please let me know. At this point, I'd like to go ahead and move into what we normally do on the beginning of our call, which is to take a few minutes and just tune in to the precious opportunity that we have to be together on this call. So if you are just joining us, I'd like to welcome you. And as I was just saying, we are doing this sort of camping style. And we will be actually going on the road January, February, and March, and also in April. We'll be going down to the southwestern United States, all the way across to Texas, and then also actually all the way to Florida. And then in April, we'll be going to Hawaii and to Korea. So in all of that, we'll be, again, on the road. But right now, we're on the road here in Marin County, California. And so, again, thanks, everyone, for joining us. And this is about what I'd like to do for our time of tuning in at the very beginning, is to give a little bit of an excerpt from this new meditation CD that we have coming out. I've now recorded all of the voice parts of it, so it's just a matter of putting the music to it. So hopefully by next month it'll be finished. We'll see. But it's called Healing Meditations for Spiritual Awakening, Blessing for All Beings, Eightfold Path for Opening Hearts. And the first one is Developing Intuition. The second one is Harmonious Relationships. The third one is World Peace. And the fourth one is Animal Relations, which I was thinking we would do the ending of that one. So we just give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have on this call to be together and connect in spirit with each other, with everyone who is part of this movement to awaken human consciousness so that we can live on this planet as we are intended to, as agents of healing and blessing, of celebrating the beauty of this earth and of the potential we have here. And we give thanks for all of the non-human animals that we share this earth with as well. And then this is the last part of the non-human animal meditation from the forthcoming CD. I send my heartfelt love and blessings to all animals of this earth and apologize for my transgressions against them. I apologize for humanity's ongoing transgressions against them. I thank them for their patience, forgiveness, and loving kindness, and vow to ever more fully live a life of kindness, tenderness, mercy, and compassion toward all living beings, even the most weak and vulnerable, and to refrain from eating, wearing, or using them in any way, and to do my best to help others also to live with kindness and mercy. I bless and salute our fellow passengers on this earth and send them all my deepest love and appreciation. I realize that as I awaken to the truth that I am, I see that no animal is ever dangerous or harmful to anyone. All are unique and beautiful expressions of the loving source of all life, contributing their roles in the precious and ongoing unfoldment of life here on this amazing planet we call our Earth. I give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. So thank you, all of you, for joining us. And as I said, if you came in late, I noticed a lot of people were not here at the very beginning, and you are now with us. So that's why I was repeating a few things. Press star 6 if you'd like to raise your hand, and I would be happy to unmute your phone as we go along. So this has been, as usual, another fabulous month. A lot has been happening in the realm of awareness of animals and animal suffering and how we can create a world of greater awareness and wisdom. We had, I thought it was kind of neat, Moby, the famous musician, wrote an article that was posted on the Huffington Post where he really strongly talked about the devastation of meat environmentally and to the animals and to our health. And I think really, you know, it's just great to see well-known people like that who everybody admires really standing up and speaking so clearly. James Cameron also and his wife continue with their quest to bring veganism. And Madeline and I were just at the VegFest in San Francisco. And, of course, it's great to go to these kinds of events because there's always so much energy, you know, for people. There's lectures, there's booths, and there's people sharing all of their enthusiasm about veganism with vegan makeup products and various kinds of foods. And all the different activist groups gather to bring their message to the world. And we had some wonderful speakers there. And both days there was a showing of Cowspiracy. I was able to give two lectures, one on the metaphysics of food, which I just really enjoyed doing that. That's kind of a specialty lecture focusing on that chapter in the World Peace Diet on how our society essentially is a culture that's very unusual in the history of the world, where we believe that that nothing exists unless it can be measured physically. And human beings have pretty much never created such a society before with that kind of a belief system. And that in many ways, I think it comes out of, it's a result of a culture that eats huge amounts of meat and dairy and desensitizes itself to animals as beings and sees them merely as pieces of meat. And then, of course, we go on to create a whole entire culture based on that kind of reductionism and materialism that sees all animals as mere pieces of meat, and even ourselves basically as merely an object that was born and will die, and that we are merely biochemical, electrical machines basically that are evolutionarily programmed to try to pass our genes on, that's all there is. It's just terrible reductionism that really, I think, strikes at the heart of our sense of self-respect and the sense we have a spiritual mission, the sense that we are eternal consciousness. I mean, this is all denied, and we're seen as merely competing in an economic system, in a sort of a gene competition, who can pass their genes on to the next generation. What a horribly perverted, absurd view of life from my point of view. But that's what is injected because we're eating so much meat and dairy. We can't really, I think, get our consciousness up high enough to see the eternal verities that really this life on planet Earth is an opportunity for us to express through a physical body. But we ourselves are consciousness. I think we all know that intuitively, that we are eternal consciousness. I think if we meditate and quiet our mind enough to get beyond the programming of our society, we can have a direct glimpse of this, a direct experience that what we are is eternal consciousness. And once that happens, you don't need to argue about it anymore. But in the meantime, I think it's very good to question the official stories of our society, especially that one. So anyway, I was able to give a whole hour-long talk on the metaphysics of food with questions, and then a talk on the World Peace Diet with piano and slideshow and all of that, the Our Fellow Mortals slideshow, which shows animals celebrating their lives with original music going with it. I always love doing that. And so, but the point is, I guess, that we see these veg fests really more and more springing up all over the North America and other countries too. And I think it's just one of many positive signs that we're seeing. And we'll be leaving, about a week and a half for one in Boston. And we'll be speaking, actually it's going to be interesting because we'll be speaking also in New Haven, Connecticut at the Yale Divinity School on Monday night, the 27th, as part of that trip to Boston, and also on Saturday night at the Worcester State University. I really enjoy being able to talk to young people about these ideas as well. So as I was saying, there's lots of fabulous things happening. I think this movie Cowspiracy is really opening up a lot of doors. We just were in San Francisco about a week and a half ago at another showing of that. And then at the end of last month, we were on Lily's Sunday, World Peace Diet Sunday call, Madeline and I, mainly Madeline. And I think that was really wonderful to have a chance to talk a little bit about the arising of intuition and how we were able not only to meet each other, but how we sort of live our lives and create the co-create the ministry that we have. I really don't, we couldn't do it by ourselves. I mean, all of you and everyone, we work together on this, and we're so grateful to everyone for all of your help and support. There's also been quite a few radio interviews lately, which has been kind of exciting, and one just the other day. It was an online, it was based in England. So veganism is definitely, a lot of doors are opening. One of the things that is quite controversial lately that we could talk about if you're interested this evening is Direct Action Everywhere as a new movement. And it was interesting because the other day when we were in San Francisco after Cowspiracy and doing the Q&A there and talking a little bit about veganism and so forth, there was several people from the Direct Action Everywhere group that are based in Oakland. And they're kind of notorious right now, I think, for some people. They're very controversial because they're the people you may have heard who will just go into a restaurant, a group, usually anywhere from 4 or 5 to maybe 9 or 10 or whatever, and they'll all have signs saying, what do they say, this is not food, it's violence. And then they will, one of the persons will be a spokesperson and speak very loudly and just tell everyone in the restaurant that what they're eating is not food, what they're eating is violence, what they're causing is violence, that these are not things, these are beings, that they are responsible for the violence that they're causing, and to encourage them to see what they're actually doing. So it's very confrontational, and they usually only do this for about 2 minutes or so, and then they just leave because apparently if they stay much longer than 2 minutes, they could get arrested. So they do it for 2 minutes and then they leave. And so this has been happening a lot in Fox News. That guy on Fox News, I always forget his name, but he's very conservative. They showed something on TV recently of this happening, and this woman was saying she apparently has adopted a chicken who she calls Snow, who was from a factory farm and who was de-beaked and would have surely been killed soon, but she took her in. It was a rescue. And so this woman was a Direct Action Everywhere person and was saying to everyone in the restaurant that the chickens you're eating, they're all Snow. They're all beings with a name and with a personality and with a life, with interests. And they're not just pieces of meat. And so this Fox guy said how absurd that is. And He said, next time we have some chicken, I'm going to say, thank you, Snow, and we're going to just all laugh about how stupid it is to think of a piece of meat as a person, as a being, you know. And so they all made a joke. But actually, there's a video that shows the woman relating to this chicken named Snow, and it's really quite touching. So anyway, the point is that direct action everywhere is actually getting, you know, play on national TV. And after my talk in San Francisco, some of these people from Direct Action Everywhere in Oakland came up to me and told me, you know, how fast their movement has grown. You know, that they're in something like, you know, 20 different countries in the world, and it's just in the space of, I think, about 18 months. They've got thousands of volunteers. They've only spent, apparently, this entire movement getting so big in 20 countries with thousands of volunteers and quite a few chapters. They've only spent something like $2,000. The whole thing is pretty much done with no money. And what was interesting was that they told me that the World Peace Diet is the most important book for them. They all love the World Peace Diet. And this one guy was saying, you know, here in Oakland, there's a guy, he buys the World Peace Diet like 10 copies at a time and just gives them out to everybody, you know, anyone who's interested in direct action everywhere and interested in spreading the vegan message, you know, directly to the people, and they all read the World Peace Diet. So because of that, I thought, well, that's, you know, it's really quite interesting to hear that. And so it's possible we'll go. Well, we've been invited to give a lecture over there. I'm not sure if we'll be able to do it this time, but we might. I have to actually set that up. It would be October, next Monday, actually, on the 20th. So anyway, the main thing I'm saying is that there's, you know, a lot of developments happening in the vegan movement. This is one of the newer aspects, and we see quite a bit of spiritualization of the movement as well. There's lots of different things happening. I wrote an article, I'm not sure if you had a chance to read it, called Is Veganism a Religion, which was published about a week ago. And the main point, I just wanted to share this too this evening, is that we never think of veganism typically as a religion. I never did. Religions have a certain quality about them, and veganism is really more of a way of life. It's an ethical stance of living. It's kind of the core of all religions. But anyway, in this article, I thought about it some more, and my sense is that you really could say that it is a religion, I think, actually, the more I think about it. Because as a religion, religion does not have to be predicated upon belief in a supreme being, right? I mean, we have many religions. Like for myself, I'm basically a Buddhist. I really resonate with the Buddhist teachings, also the Jain teachings. I really study both of those a lot. Also Taoist and Confucian teachings. There's absolutely no concept in any of those four major world religions of any kind of supreme being at all. So you don't need that. These are religions that are based on a commitment to ethical living and a commitment to spiritual liberation and spiritual awakening and a commitment to awakening to the truth. And I think exactly that's what veganism is. It's a religion like these religions, like Buddhism, Taoism, some forms of Hinduism also. I think Vedanta is very, Advaita Vedanta, non-dual teachings, are also very similar in a sense to this. But the thing I love about veganism is that it's really not, it's not non-dual. I mean, it's both, I would say, non-dual and dual in the sense that it's got its, you know, veganism as a religion and as a way of life has its feet planted firmly on the ground of acting ethically. And I think that's very important. And a lot of, especially in more New Age religious teachings, fail there, really. They don't make contact with an ethical stance that is radically inclusive and that actually demands of us some discipline. And requires us to question our programming in a way that's accountable. We have to be accountable for it. You know, most religions say, well, you know, just be forgiving, be loving, you know, be kind. And that's it, you know. So you can say, oh, yeah, I'm forgiving, I'm loving, I'm kind, I like having a burger, you know, whatever. But, you know, veganism actually has criteria that, you know, especially, obviously, in relationship to our treatment of non-human animals, that force us, I think, in a very positive way to be honest and question how much we are really living the ethical teachings of this religion. And the core of veganism is ahimsa, which is the ancient Sanskrit word for nonviolence, which is sort of a negative way of saying it, nonviolence. I think a more positive way of saying, translating ahimsa would be loving kindness or unconditional compassion or maha karuna, great compassion. And that this is the core of all the world religions, what we're really supposed to be cultivating when we're practicing spiritual practice, when we're living our lives according to spiritual principles, when we're making an effort to evolve spiritually or to be authentic spiritually, then we are called to live a more ethical life and to be a human being whose life somehow emerges out of a direct experience that I am not just a fundamentally separate self here competing with others for something, but that I'm here basically to bless the world and to find the unique gifts that I can bring to the world to bless the world. And this deep teaching really, I think, goes throughout all the world religions, especially when you look at the teachings of the founders of the religion, more than merely the realized sages of the religions, more than the theology very often gets a little more away from this. But this seems to be a fundamental understanding, which is in total agreement with veganism as a religion. And so I think there's a benefit, actually, of thinking of veganism as a religion in the sense that religions are recognized by our society as ways, as institutions that we can rely on to not only guide us in our lives, but that also we can essentially use to justify our behavior. So in other words, if someone's in jail and they don't want to eat meat and dairy, and or in another, I shouldn't say this really, but another form of jail, which is a hospital or a school as a kid, these are all sort of authoritarian environments where we're very often told what we can do and what we can't do, and we just have to follow orders. Or corporations or the military, actually, are also very authoritarian. So when we find ourselves in these authoritarian, hierarchical environments where we maybe just can't be a vegan just because we want to, they say, no, you've got to eat what we give you. You've got to eat, this is what we have. You've got to eat, this is what everybody eats. And so the only justification usually that is given, well, one is health. You know, if you have a health reason, then you don't. If you're in a school or a prison, perhaps you could get away with it. But if you don't have that, then it's religion. And so if you say I'm a vegan, they say, well, that's not a religion. And I've actually had several people in prisons write to me, and I've been writing to them, also responding, telling me that, you know, it's really a problem for them. They're in a prison, and they're being forced to eat meat and dairy. And what religion can they say they are to avoid that? And the closest I've been able to come to any religion really is Buddhism. You know, Jainism also, but I think some forms of Buddhism, like Mahayana Buddhism especially, there's really, you could make the argument that you really shouldn't be eating meat or dairy. And But still, there's an awful lot of Buddhists that eat meat and dairy, so it's not so clear cut. But if someone, you know, if we could actually get veganism recognized as a religion, then that would really open up the doorway for people to rely on that, so they wouldn't be forced against their will to participate in certain activities. Perhaps also vaccinations. You know, there are basically, I don't think there are such a thing as vegan vaccinations. They're all, there's so many different types of animals products in vaccinations. And there's bovine serum, there's typically egg and other cells that are cultured from animals. So animals are used for virtually all vaccinations, and also they're pretty much all tested on animals anyway, whether there's their actual cells are in there too. So you could say, if it's in the case of mandatory vaccination, my religion is veganism, I'm not going to, so I'm released from that. Although I would have to say, if it comes to the point of mandatory vaccination, that it may be impossible. I really don't know to have any kind of excuse if we have martial law imposed, which I hope we don't ever, that never happens, but with this Ebola epidemic and so forth, and, you can kind of see on the horizon some possibilities where it might be good to be able to say that my religion is veganism, if that would be accepted. But anyway, so the idea here is to shed light, really, on the age-old question of spirituality and religion, to bring the critical ideas that Mahatma Gandhi espoused from as a highly spiritual, realized being, that the only way that we can have positive social change ultimately is through positive personal change, that we are all essentially accountable. And as we transform ourselves and are able to bring this inner transformation that we experience ourselves to the world and to others and share it with others, as I know you're all making an effort to do in one way or another, then we're creating the foundation for real positive transformation. Yeah, I think there's nothing more important than this. So those are some of the main ideas that I wanted to share today. We've gone now through about half an hour. I'm happy to answer questions if people have them, as I was saying, and or if you have any comments about anything I've been saying, this direct action everywhere is, I think, quite a fascinating movement. There's quite a lot of questions about that. There's also another thing that's been coming up, actually, for me lately, is the question of karma. And there's been some controversy in certain areas, certain communities, about karma. And some people say, well, the World Peace Diet says that whatever happens to you, it's your fault, right? That basically, the Will Teller calls it the boomerang effect. So if you get hit, it's because you ate meat. Or if you get hurt somehow or raped or whatever, it's because you ate meat and cheese earlier in your life. And it's just, it's just payback. And so I think it's very important, first of all, to not be so simplistic about it. The World Peace Diet, number one, never uses the word karma, and there's a reason for that, actually, because the word karma is a very technical word. As you sow, so shall you reap, or the boomerang effect, are very similar to karma in the sense that what goes around comes around is a universal principle. We understand that. We can see that operating in our lives. But karma is a very technical word arising in very sophisticated Indian philosophical traditions going back thousands of years, and it was never, ever, ever used, divorced from the idea of rebirth. Karma and rebirth, you cannot have one without the other. You cannot have the idea, in India anyway, the idea of karma without the idea of rebirth. Of a being, of taking multiple births in countless lifetimes. And you can't have the idea of rebirth without the idea of karma, because that's what determines the next life, is the karma. And so these two things are completely dependent on each other. And in the West, we just don't have the kind of fundamental cultural agreement that we're all here. That we're all, I don't use the word reincarnation, because it's a word that has some, it's kind of loaded. But the Buddhist term is rebirth, that you're born in another realm. I mean, maybe a human realm, it may be, there's many different realms when one dies in one realm, we're born in another realm. So, and it's all according to the seeds that we have sown. That's true. But to try to know what's happening in this life based on what I did earlier and just in this life is utterly absurd from the point of view of karma, you know, from the people who talk about karma, because that's just ridiculous. That's like they would say like only looking at one day in your life. You know, you've lived thousands of days. Why are you only picking one day? You know, you have all these other days before. And the same thing, you know, from their point of view, has been thousands and thousands of lifetimes where we've sown so many different seeds that will bear fruit. And so we never know. And then the other thing that I have to say, too, is part of that, which is, again, completely alien to us in the West, the idea of we're always trying to do things and have a good result. And if something bad happens, we think it's somebody else's fault. And so the idea is, really with karma, is that we take responsibility for our actions. However, of course, the problem with that is it can tend in our society to create a situation where then people think that you blame the victim. You know, if somebody has something bad happen to them, well, that's just their fault. So we don't have to have any compassion for them because they deserve it. And this is a very heartless approach. And, of course, very often, women are abused, perhaps more than men. I mean, men are abused a lot by men, but men are basically usually doing most of the abusing, at least physical abusing. So it's also somewhat of a sexist policy too, or stance that if a woman gets abused somehow, that's, you know, she was eating dairy, so it's kind of her fault. And it says it in the World Peace Diet. So it does not say that in the World Peace Diet. And you can't. And we're just, there's no way that we can reduce this process to, you know, one tiny little lifetime. There are fundamental teachings in the Buddhist tradition, for example, and other Jainism, and really all the Asian traditions, that if something happens in this lifetime that we feel is, you know, something we don't like, the whole idea is not to feel bad about it, to feel like I'm a victim, but to see it as an opportunity and to respond as best I can to the situation. And one of the ways that one does that in these teachings is to acknowledge that in all my former lifetimes, I probably engaged in all kinds of unskillful and harmful behavior to other beings and harmed them. And so if something happens to me now, then all right, that's what, it's nothing, it's just what, you know, is manifesting in my life right now, and I'm not going to blame anyone else for it. I'll take responsibility and try to respond as best I can. And for example, in the Kagyu tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, I lived for a couple of years in a center in San Francisco in the Kagyu tradition. And of the four lineages in Tibetan Buddhism, the Kagyu lineage is the lineage that most emphasizes doing a lot of meditation, a lot of practices where you're speeding up your spiritual growth. And so one of the sayings in the Kagyu tradition is that the Kagyu tradition or the Kagyu lineage is the mishap lineage. The mishap tradition. In other words, anyone who really studies the Kagyu teachings, tries to live their life according to them, does a lot of meditation, a lot of spiritual growth very quickly, that they will have lots of accidents happening to them possibly, because they are ripening their karma very quickly. So whereas it might take some people four or five lifetimes of really hard spiritual work and so forth to ripen their karma and so forth. But in the Kagyu tradition, when you're really doing these very powerful practices and moving the energy very quickly and evolving more rapidly than is possible in most other traditions, then you'll be going through a lot more, perhaps, sicknesses coming up, disharmony happening, whatever it is. But instead of feeling bad about it, you feel good about it. Think, okay, good, I'm getting rid of this, I'm doing that, that's great, good, 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 and just keep going, you know, and don't let it get you down. And so I think from my point of view, it's a wondrously liberating point of view to for oneself. But we can never ever force that on other people. You know, if something untoward happens to another person or to an animal, to anyone, to say, well, good, you're ripening some karma, you know, hope you get some more bad things happen to you. You know, that's like a terrible thing to think, and it's definitely not going to endear you to other people or to help you cultivate more compassion. I think it's very important for all of us to deeply understand that we live in a society that is violent, and that we're all wounded, and that people are harmed, and it is traumatic, and that the best thing we can do is to cultivate a real compassion for the suffering of others. That we're taught in our society not to do that. We're taught in our society if something bad happens to somebody else, you kind of, you know, deep down inside, you kind of celebrate and think, oh, good, now I can get ahead of them and make more money than they may, or glad it didn't happen to me. You know, those kind of thoughts. Those are absolutely antithetical to authentic spiritual growth. And, you know, authentic spiritual growth is really about, you know, if something for oneself happens, then not to complain about it and blame other people. But if we do something to harm another ourselves, then to really be sensitive to that. Or if something happens to another and they're harmed, to really be sensitive to that and to do the best we can to relieve their suffering. To yearn to relieve the suffering of others. That is what compassion is. It's the yearning. It's not just wishing that they're not suffering. It's yearning to reduce their suffering. That's the definition of compassion. So I think veganism is very clear about this, and it's quite disturbing to me to see sometimes people who are vegans sometimes talking about non-vegans who are suffering and saying, well, they deserve it. You know, because they're not vegan, you know, and having no compassion for these non-vegan people. And then the non-vegan people see the vegans acting like that, and they think, well, what, these vegans are just hard-hearted, and you know, they care about animals, but they don't care about human animals. And I think, you know, we are all wounded in our society. It's important to cultivate compassion with other people for the suffering of other people, and obviously to model compassion in our relationships with other people and with animals, and that the more we do that, the more we actually become a force for healing in a way that we're an example of that. People will see that. Too often, I think, vegans are not in our society. We just think it's just about animals, and we very often lose compassion for non-vegans, for humans who are non-vegan. And so I think it's important for us to be very careful about that, and to cultivate compassion for people who are still lost in the illusion of eating meat and competing economically and all these things. We were there ourselves. Almost all of us were there, and we would not have liked it if people had just completely, you know, made fun of us behind our backs about it or not cared if we suffered. The more I think we can question this training in our society to disconnect and really to minimize the suffering we're causing others, and that's what we're all taught. We're all taught not to discount. We're taught to discount the suffering we cause to pigs and cows and chickens and fishes and future generations and animal exploiters and all, you know, the slaughterhouse workers and so forth. These people are suffering terrible, and the animals are also in wildlife, so we don't think about it. And we become sort of very fast and hard in our relationships in general in our society. And so to slow down and to feel and to really have soft eyes, as I talk about in the World Peace Diet, for others, not just animals, but for other human beings as well, I think is a very important part of the teaching that I've actually been seeing this past month in some communities really creating some conflict. So I just wanted to, you know, emphasize that. We do have someone who has pressed star 6. It's our friend Lily. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute your line, Lily, and great to hear from you.
Good okay. evening, Will. I'm really happy to be here, and you've given me a lot to think about, the soft eyes. I had a question about that, but I wanted to go back to, is veganism a religion? You know, I didn't read your article because I'm not online. I assume it, you had it done online, and I haven't read the article yet. But you know, the way I look at it, I think we're shooting ourselves in the foot if we try to call veganism a religion, because veganism goes, as you said, goes so well with any religion. It's about compassion. It's about doing unto others as we would have them do unto us. And to be an ethical, compassionate vegan as part of my Christian walk, as part of my Jewish walk, as part of my Buddhist walk, I think that if a person, even if they were in a situation in a prison, could say, I am part of the practice of my particular Christianity is to not harm others, and that is my vegan ethic. To use veganism as a sect, maybe a sect of any religion, I am the vegan sect, I am in a vegan sect of Christianity, but to call veganism a religion itself, to me, seems like we are excluding all the other religions, and people don't want to come, you know, people don't want to be proselytized to. They want to do their religion, and if we are considered a religion, they'll say, well, I already have a religion that works for me. I don't need your religion. So that's,
right.
There are Christian groups, there's Hallelujah Acres, there are Buddhist
right.
groups like you went to, there are Jewish vegan groups, there are, you know, Muslim vegan groups, very few, but there are. And, you know, all the major religions of the world have their vegan people in them. And this is going to get more and more, I know it. I mean, and that's, I wanted to say that about that, because that's
uh-huh.
just my opinion. And I really have, you know, I would like to make the World Peace Diet a religion, and to be Will Tuttle, to be the person that we worship. But, I mean, and if anybody ever wanted... In 5 months, you know, if anybody listened to me, I think we would have maybe a religion of maybe just the people who've read the World Peace Diet. And I don't think that that's going to work, you know? It just isn't, you know?
Right.
So I think we have to be able to infiltrate all of these religions with our
uh-huh.
values. And I've
right.
seen this happen. All of the religions need to be infiltrated by us as living example. And I loved what you said about soft eyes, because as compassionate as I think I am, when I am kidded about, when I, you know, when people, you know, I have a beautiful, compassionate person who comes steadily to the World Peace Diet study group, and she has relatives who say to her, we're going to feed you steak next time you come over, honey, you know, and they're her relatives, you know, and they, you know, it's hard to look with soft eyes at these people. It's very hard
right,
because
yeah.
they're being very disrespectful, and I know that this particular person feels about veganism the way I feel about it. I give my life to it. I've given my whole life to the message of the World Peace Diet. It is my life. My life revolves around it, just like you. I am one of your satellites. And by the way, this person is on the line, and I'd love for her to say a few words about what the study group did for her, because she was not a vegan when we first talked.
Oh, uh-huh.
And she is a vegan activist now. So, I mean, it's pretty exciting what this study group, I'm using the study group as a tool of activism, because it's the only way I can really be an effective activist out here in the boonies.
Right,
so
that's great.
One thing I want to say, just one more thing,
uh-huh.
I don't want to be long-winded
okay.
here.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering how you feel about the people that go into the restaurants and do the activism in the restaurants, and say, you know, action or whatever they're called, a direct action group. Is that looking at the people in the restaurant with soft eyes? Is that
right.
is that the message that we want to give, that we're people, you know, ransacking a restaurant and saying you're eating violence here? I don't think that is actually, I don't know, maybe the young people, it turns them on to do that. It's a fun, it's an action, but I don't know that.
Right.
I don't know if I want myself, my own vegan walk, or in yours, the World Peace Diet
sure.
study, to be
right.
connected to that, because I don't think that's really looking with soft eyes at the people in the restaurant. I was one of those people in the restaurant, and if an enraged vegan came in, or even if a happy vegan came in and said, "You people are eating violence," I would walk so far away from the vegan message that I'd say, my God, I don't know what this is, but these people are crazy. See,
great.
So I think young people tend to get on. These are young people. We're older people.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds great.
Right.
It sounds great, but then you really look at it. You have to put yourself with those soft eyes at the restaurant, and I loved filet mignon, and I'm a vegan now 8 years because of the World Peace Diet, and if anybody forced me to eat any animal product at all and said, I'll shoot you if you don't eat, I would say, shoot, because I don't want to live in a world like that anymore. But
right.
if someone came to me when I was dining on my filet mignon and wearing
right.
my mink coat, I would just say, God, who let them in? Let's get the police. See?
Yeah. Right.
It's not.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, thanks.
Great.
Yeah, those
sorry.
Are good
I'm
points.
Sorry
yeah.
to take up so much time, but
no,
if
it's
you
very
wouldn't
good
mind,
point.
This person is a shy person. She's an ethical, compassionate vegan, and I would love for you to, if she raises her hand, star six, call on her, because I want to, and I'd love to give out the number, but you give it out on your website anyway, don't you?
Sure. Yeah. You mean the call-in number and everything for the Sunday
for
evening?
For the World Peace Diet Study Group. This
circle.
Is now we're celebrating
yeah.
on the 20th of October, a solid year. We haven't missed a single Sunday, World
That's
Peace
great.
Diet Sunday. And we can't get people off the phone. I mean,
right.
I open it exactly on time. 5
yeah.
o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern, exactly on time, and I close it, and I start with this prayer for the worldwide prayer circle for animals. I started and
yeah.
I ended with that, but people, by an hour later, they're still on the line, so I just start the music playing and just ease them off the line. But people are so happy they found this, and let the people that are in your inner circle of vegan facilitators use it as a tool of activism, because I'd love to see
right.
lots of study groups on the phone bridge. We are slowly
right.
reading the World Peace Diet. We're almost finished. We're in the journey of transformation, and I've gotten so many beautiful comments about you and Madeline, and they can get that. They can hear that. That is just a beautiful, beautiful keepsake, really. I will.
Oh, the recording of September
you and Madeline,
30th,
Madeline and you.
Was
she was
yeah.
just lovely, and you were just
right.
wonderful and funny, and just like having a chat around the fire with you. It was wonderful and warm and lovely. Thank you for doing
right.
that.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks, Lily. Do you want to tell everybody the phone number maybe one more time? Do you have it handy?
Yes,
do,
I will. I will. It's
it really
the
is
phone
good.
Number is area code 712-432-3900. I'm going to repeat the number in case people don't have a pencil handy or pen. 712-432-3900. And then the PIN code for that is 568-364-POUND. Again, 568-364-POUND. And it's, you never know what's going to happen on the World Peace Diet Study Group. It's definitely like a show.
Right.
It's
yeah.
pretty amazing. What it's kind of just has a life of its own, and yet
right.
we are getting the message of the World Peace Diet out every single Sunday.
Right.
And new people come every week. So, I mean, not that, you know, it's a revolving door, but they come, and they get at
right.
least part of the message.
Right.
And if they want to hear... that they want to hear you and Madeline specifically, all they need to do is dial all those numbers that I just gave, but instead of 3900, 3903.
Yeah.
And then there's
okay.
a PIN code for that, 258-3788-POUND. This is if they want to do it by phone, if they don't have a,
right.
if they're not on the computer. 258-3788-POUND. Otherwise, they can contact Sharon, sharon.abar@outlook.com, and what she will do, and she has flyers for the World Peace Diet Study Group, everything, what she will do is put them in touch via computer. Of all, we've had several, and we've
right.
had you on several times, but other guests
right.
on, and more are going to come, more are coming, lined up to come. So it's really going, and... it'll be a whole year of doing this. Amazing, isn't it?
Yes. Very good. Well, thanks, Lily. Yeah, as I said, if you go to worldpeacetat.com or worldtitle.com and you just click on schedule, I have it right at the very top, the phone number and the code.
And it's open to anyone. So if you know if you have friends that might be interested in the world peace diet or in veganism, it's as Lily said.
Well, non-vegans have come to this.
Yeah.
Non-vegans have come to this, and now they're vegan activists. And I'd love you to call on this lady if she's there, because she can tell you that, and she won't be like me. I'm gonna be quiet now.
Great. All right, Lily. Thank you for calling, and all the best to Jim too. Great. So, someone here. I'm unmuting your line. This is area code 405-473-2689. You're live. Hello.
Hi, that's me. Yes. First of all, I want to thank you for...
Oh, you're welcome.
...tonight. I love hearing you. Any chance I get to hear you speak, it's just always just great. So... that first, and also thank you for writing this important and timely book. About a year ago, I was exploring veganism when Lily Macy invited me to her Phonebridge study, where we read and discuss the World Peace Diet together. And joining this study and reading your book and discussing it with others on Lily's Phonebridge just has really, it's changed my life so much, and it continues.
Wonderful.
Being a part of the study has strengthened my understanding of the vegan imperative in a very profound way, and it has awakened the activist within me. I just try to, I've talked to everybody about it now, and I carry the book around with me. That's a beautiful book. I have learned from reading the study and being a part of it, that being a vegan is a living practice of compassion, which is the most important action that I can do in my life. So I hope that some of you listening here tonight will join us on Phonebridge, because we share together the reading of this profound book. We also get to hear each other's insights. You know, we hear Lily's insights, which are always wonderful, and we hear each other's insights into the study. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. And I think you're right. You know, this I think the genius of this Sunday night group is it's just basically reading the World Peace Diet, just actually reading the book. And then doing some sharing about it and going through it slowly, and I think that's, you know, sticking with the main text is always the most inspiring thing. So it's really terrific, and I think it's something that we can all replicate in various ways, like having World Peace Diet study groups in our communities is another way. A lot of people have done that and are able to get together maybe for, as a facilitator for a six-week program where people read the book together. And there's really study groups of the World Peace Diet going on, I think, all over the place, all the time. And I think the more that happens, the better, because that way people are getting in touch with the ideas themselves and reading them directly rather than just talking about them. I think that's really the most helpful thing. So thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, thanks. There's Lily also mentioned two other things about the veganism as a religion and the direct action everywhere people. Yeah, I think, you know, one point I would say, I guess, is that in other parts of the world, religions are not exclusivist. You know, people can be, like in our culture, we think, oh, I'm a Christian, so I cannot be a Buddhist, or I cannot be a Muslim or whatever, because I'm this, I can't be that. But that I think is something that's ridiculous, that we don't need to have this exclusivist mentality. And in other societies, it's very often common for people to be both Buddhist and Taoist, for example, or Hindu and Buddhist or whatever. I mean, they're not at all considered exclusivist, and they're considered to be totally mutually supporting. So you could be a vegan and a Christian, and they could be both considered religions, and without any. Without any problem, but we do have that really kind of traumatic history of people being at sword point, you know, converting to our religion, and it's only this and can't be that. If you're this, you can't be that. And I think that's very unfortunate and really, a sign of a somewhat toxic religion. But we also have Unitarian Universalism, for example, which people say, which is a religion. I mean, I'm a Unitarian or a Unitarian Universalist. That's considered a religion, but it doesn't have, it's similar to veganism in the sense that it's really a way of living that is socially active, and you don't have, you can believe in God or not, or, you know, it's really sort of free thinking. And so I think, you know, broadening our definition of religion beyond the exclusivism that's been forced on us, it would be helpful. And as far as the DXE folks, you know, I think basically you're right, young people. I think, you know, I unfortunately, I think most of the people who are doing this are probably not at the point where they're really practicing looking with eyes, soft eyes of kindness and compassion to the people in the restaurant when they're saying this. And I think if we get to the point where that would be the next level of taking this, so to just say, you know, we really appreciate your listening and just hold it in your heart to question the rightness of these actions, and we love you and appreciate you and support you, you know, something like that would be another way of doing this. It would be very direct, but perhaps not create the kind of shaming and blaming, which I think are toxic. They don't, in the long run, they don't help. So thank you so much, Lee, for that. And there's someone else here. Oh, Nina, I think. Wait, let's see. We have, we have Nina. I'm unmuting your phone. Hi.
Hi, Will. How are you?
Good. I guess you heard we're coming your way in a few days.
Yes, I'm really excited that you're coming up here again. Unfortunately, I won't be able to connect with you. I have school that weekend, but I'm glad that we're all here tonight. And so insightful, the things that you said this evening, Will, about having compassion for our fellow humans. I've been vegan, I'm on my eighth year now, and I've come to the conclusion that it's most effective for me when I'm using my veganism or the vegan message to uplift the other person rather
right.
than make them feel bad.
Right.
Because when we make them feel bad, people really, I think that what it boils down to is the shadow is so dark and so horrible
right.
that it's really difficult for people to just look at it all at once. And
right.
they have to be led to it gently. So
right.
using whatever gift that you have to share the joy of veganism with your community, be it by
right,
you know,
right.
volunteering, doing things with food, and you know, just gently bringing the vegan message into your daily activities, I have found is the most effective way. And
yeah.
The whole karma thing, that, you know, I think that's a dangerous thing when I see my fellow vegans almost gleefully celebrating when something bad happens to somebody that maybe was anti-vegan. I think it's really not a good message to be putting out there for the general
right,
public
right.
because then we get pigeon-toed into being angry, vicious people that don't care about humans. And it's actually, that was why I was so inspired to become active, was because I felt like I needed to help the fellow humans with this
right.
dilemma that we're in, because we're just so hypnotized and it's so damaging. We damage ourselves just as much in the end.
Right. Well said. Yeah, exactly. That's really the key, I think. You know, and as veganism, one of the points I really always try to emphasize is that it's, going vegan is not the end. You know, you're like, now I've made it, I'm vegan, that's the end of my spiritual, emotional, intellectual growth. You know, I'm done.
Yeah.
It's really just, in many ways, it's just the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
We've got a long way to go.
Exactly.
it's a good
but it
start,
can be a groundbreaking beginning, you
yes,
know.
Yes, it is. right. It's definitely something to be celebrated, but then we can really get to work and begin to actually bring our life into alignment with vegan values, which means, as you're saying, to spread the joy of veganism in a way that that attracts people rather than trying to beat them down and force them into veganism, you know, sort of against their will or something, make them feel bad about themselves. Usually in the long run, that's going to backfire.
It does. And I, for me, from what I've experienced so far, is if I concentrate on sharing whatever gifts that I have as a human being, because we all have gifts,
right,
then the vegan message always carries through with that in a loving manner.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, the gifts you have. And you've been doing that. I mean, for those of you, I didn't mention it. So we're talking about the Boston area where we're going to be in Worcester, I think, right? You're kind of in the Worcester area. You've been going to Unitarian churches, I think, right, with them kind of bringing the vegan message to churches.
Yeah, we did that for a couple of years. And now I'm kind of on another journey where we just opened a yoga studio in Gardner. And 2 weeks ago, one of the yoga teachers did a couples yoga night. And I cooked a 5-course vegan meal. And the yoga theme for the night for the couples yoga was ahimsa. And there's a lot more to ahimsa just than being kind to animals, because we, you know, bring ahimsa into our workplace and, you know. Anyways, nobody was vegan except for myself and my husband. Even the yoga teacher wasn't vegan. And they really enjoyed the food. And they had questions about it, and they were very curious. And I felt really good about it afterwards, because I felt like, wow, you know, I've inspired maybe somebody to make chocolate mousse out of tofu.
Right, isn't that great?
Yeah.
That's wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, so best wishes to you and Madeline, and I hope that you have a safe and wonderful journey up here, and I know that you'll be so well received up here, as you always are.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Nina. Really appreciate it. It's great to hear your voice, and thanks for the great work you're doing.
Oh, no, thank you, Will.
All right.
You're the teacher.
Great. I remember so well being in your kitchen when you did the video of your cooking demo there. That was terrific.
Yeah, I'm going to be bringing that back again, hopefully in the new year, and we'll get some new episodes out.
Great. Okay, thanks. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so now, let's see. Thank you so much, Nina. We have Mark on the line, I think. Actually, you know what, folks? Mark, you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Mark. I'm having a little bit of a, I'm getting to a little bit of a minor, what should I say, a minor crisis, in the sense that we're in this, I don't know if you were there at the beginning, but I mentioned to everybody that we're sitting in our 1971 Volkswagen bus in the driveway of this woman in Mill Valley, and running this whole thing here, and I'm relying on the computer. The battery is getting to the point where it's going to be running out pretty soon. So our call, we're going to probably have to. That's a great idea. Anyway, go ahead, Mark, and talk a little bit. I'm going to see if I can maybe possibly switch over to Madeline's iPad. But go ahead and let's hear what you have to say, and I'll be listening. Thanks. Great.
Okay. Yeah, well, two gigantic subjects today. And first of all, thanks, Will. Glad to be here and with everybody.
Uh-huh.
Religion, veganism as a religion, and karma. I'd like to acknowledge Nina, because congratulations on opening a yoga studio. World Peace Yoga is now in its, I think, ninth year, and we're going strong. And that comes up a lot because of the name World Peace Yoga. That kind of captures people right away, wondering, you know, what's going on here. And then the rumor in town is that you have to be vegan to practice World Peace Yoga, which, of course, isn't true. Most of the people that come into the studio are not vegan, and So that it presents a lively conversation, just like we're having here tonight. And of course, karma fits into that as well, because as you spoke earlier, that might be a causal situation where what happened in somebody's past life then results in what's happening in this present life. At the same time, there are four different domains of yoga, and karma yoga is one of them. And karma yoga is really about service, which is what karma means anyway, which is action.
Right.
So it's really looking at the action of one's life. And from a yogic point of view, then that would be a life of service, serving others. And I think in the past, and even to some people today, serving others usually refers to other people. And now as more and more people are widening their circle of compassion, they're realizing that it's all beings, all living beings, the earth as well, and that circle of compassion in that way. So to be of service is to be of service to all that there is, really, on the planet, which goes into another part of yoga philosophy, which would be Svadhyaya, which is about self-study, always taking a look at all the things that you have. So from a service point of view, or from a ahimsa point of view of being all loving, is everything I'm saying, or all my deeds, or all my actions, I'm monitoring them 24/7. So I'm looking at how it affects me first, how it affects all the others that are around me, and so it's constant vigilance. And so, and it gets back to, okay, so where are we? Is veganism as a religion? It is a little bit of a slippery slope, because that is essence, I think, is really important, because of the requirement of some kind of structure. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about the World Peace Diet as a book. It gives a structure for living life in a compassionate way, whereas it includes all the planet. And that's so much of what's required. It's similar from a yogi point of view, but even then, I know that there are yoga studios that define ahimsa, all loving or non-harming, as don't hurt yourself when you're practicing asana, which that circle of compassion is limited to only when one is practicing the good posture on the mat rather than extending it out to all beings. So to have some structure within veganism, because I know so many people, when we were talking about the soft diets, I know a lot of people that call themselves vegan, but it's really primarily because they're eating a plant-based diet. So,
right.
And it's only limited to pretty much eating a plant-based diet, but they call themselves a card-carrying vegan. So without that structure, or without that awareness, or without that self-study of looking at themselves and how they think, say, and do, not only with their own selves, because they're concerned about their diet and how they treat themselves, but then how they treat other people, or the people that are eating in the Chipotle restaurant that they're screaming and hollering at, or the workers that are working in the slaughterhouses. But really, that compassion has to be, or empathy, like really feeling what other people are feeling, has to be extended all of the time. And so, in the sense that veganism has more structure, i.e. a religion, I love that idea, because it is important that people understand the depth of the vegan lifestyle, just because it's so easy for people to kind of co-opt these things, just like vegetarian was co-opted, or yoga has been co-opted in the West now. Most people think of yoga, they simultaneously think of it as the physical postures, when there's basically 16 parts of a yoga practice, and 9 of them have to do with meditation. Whereas the physical asanas is one small part of that. So the more and more people can have these dialogues and become aware of things like we're doing tonight, I think we can get to the heart and soul of the big, gigantic circle of empathy and compassion to embrace everyone with kindness and always looking at, is that the most kind thing that I could say or do or how I treat somebody? And starting with myself and then radiating out to all others as well. So I know that's something that that is practiced in our community, and we're always there to assist each other and to kind of in a non-judgmental way, always. I was having a meeting with somebody the other day, and they said, oh, yeah, that would be great. We'll be able to do both of those things. We'll be able to kill two – oh, I didn't mean to say kill two birds with one stone. And it's just this camaraderie, say camaraderie of compassion. We're all there in a non-judgmental way to assist each other 24/7.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well said, Mark. Thank you so much. Wow. Yeah, it's interesting to see in the yoga community how veganism is beginning to make headway, but there's still a lot of resistance, isn't there?
There is. As a matter of fact, we were accused of being the vegan cult, and it's just
yeah.
It's always something like that. It doesn't matter what group of people there is. Whenever there's a large group of people, there are always going to be people that are kind of on the fringe or
right.
Putting themselves in the middle of something, even to look at it from a different point of view or their point of view. And the more and more that we have these conversations and really get to the heart and soul, I think it's easier for people to just like in a 12-step group, know that there are other people that feel the same way, that it gives them a foundation and,
right.
and an affirmation to be okay with it and to speak their truth and stand tall. And in that way, we're moving towards a more systemically, I believe, moving towards a more kind, peaceful planet.
Yes, well said. Thanks, Mark. Yeah. Wow.
And I really want to emphasize. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, is there anything you want to share with everybody, just about anything specific that's going on lately, or is that basically what you?
Just speaking into what's happening tonight. I know 2015 is going to be a big year. For us, we've got a lot of irons in the fire. Anna has finished the World Peace Yoga book, and so we just started our first class a month ago. They'll have their second meeting this weekend, where we're using the World Peace Yoga book as the foundation for our spiritual training, teacher training, and that book is also being published for the general public as well. Yeah, so the World Peace Yoga book will be out in 2015. The complement to that is the World Peace Diet Cookbook, which is part of the Peace House Grill. So that's coming to fruition, and so that'll be published in 2015.
Great.
And we're the sponsor and promoters for a band that's called The Peace. And they've been playing around the air regionally, and their new CD is coming out soon. So we're real enthusiastic about that. And we're working on our the World Peace Kitchens. And so the food products will be coming out and being launched in 2015 as well. So have everybody look for the World Peace Diet Cuisine. So a lot of great things are coming to fruition kind of all at once, which is great because it creates a lot of synergy around them. And we're staying busy, and the expansion of the World Peace Diet Center, where the yoga studio is that renovation is ongoing, and just had a visit from the local gas company that moves all our gas lines around. So thankful for them, and in the work that they do. So we're in the midst of construction, and so yeah, things are moving along, and it's just real inspiring to see so many people enthusiastically being involved in all the great projects. And I think that's the one thing that that we're really talking a lot about and really focusing on is this really encouraging people to seek vegan authors, artists, people who are authentically and genuinely on a spiritual vegan path, and just really support them wholeheartedly, just to really vote with their dollars, put their money where their mouth is, and find people that are really dedicated and support them wherever they are in the world. And that's one of the things that we're doing ourselves and encouraging others to do. We just had some friends, Kudos, that are just magical band, conscious rock, as we call it, and they just finished an Indiegogo campaign and raised $40,000, and we're really big supporters of them, as they are of us, and they're carrying the vegan message forward. And so we're just actively looking for other groups and people that we can collaborate with to really push this whole message and this whole movement lifestyle further down.
Right. Great. It's great to hear all the things you get going there, Mark. It's always good to talk to you. And I think, as everybody knows, probably most of you, well, maybe you don't, but Mark was one of the pioneers in the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training Program, was really one of the first, really the first one to start a World Peace Diet study group in Cincinnati that grew into an ongoing study group and spread to the yoga studio and then the World Peace Jubilee, where we presented the World Peace Diet facilitator training quite a few times too. So anyway, that's the it's just so great to see you're continuing on, and you're starting a vegan restaurant, the Peace House Grill, and we're looking forward to our paths crossing before too long. Thanks so much, Mark, for joining us this evening.
Thanks you. Well, thanks everybody. Yeah.
Great. All right. Take care. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Mark. Well, I was able to hook up the computer to a phone, to a power, so we're okay here for the moment. There's one more person who was hoping to, who had raised their hand here, and it's area code 562-212-5241. Let's see here. So
hi.
You are now unmuted. Hello.
Hi, Will, it's Tara.
Oh, Tara, hi. Good
to
have you with us. Wonderful.
Good to be on the call. Good to hear from everybody. I'm amazed at how Mark is, he's just like ripples going into so many different directions.
Yes, it's true. Yeah, that's just fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, and good to hear from everyone, especially Nina. I haven't heard your voice in a long time. Really great to hear from you again. Oh, you're welcome. I have kind of a different perspective, and won't speak long on it, but I just want to kind of put it out there. First of all, regarding vegan, I love these two topics, regarding veganism as a religion. I've already embraced this, and when I do speak to people and they ask me about being a vegan, I just tell them that veganism is a religion to me. It is my religion. And that it covers pretty much all of my spiritual bases. And I agree with you that I don't think it needs to be exclusive. Hinduism is not exclusive. Hinduism embraces all ways. It's a theosophy, a philosophy. And I feel the same way about it. I get very excited thinking about the day that I have the opportunity to write it down on a form and where it asks me what my, you know, maybe a census or something. So
right.
I say, you know, more power to that. Let's talk about that some more. Let's see how we can make it not dogmatic, not necessarily a dogmatic practice, but to spread this idea, because it is. It's a very pure religion, and I think it's a great idea.
Right.
The other thing I want to talk about, I have a little bit of a different perspective, and that's on, and I talked to Marlene about this once on a phone call. Karma. What is karma really? What exactly is karma? Karma really is nothing more than a long-held thought form to me, in my mind.
Right, right, uh-huh.
And the more you persist, you know, if something happens in your world or in your life and you say, oh, you know, it's karma, therefore, you know, this is happening, you're actually persisting what is perhaps, if it's bad karma, a negative experience or idea of something that you once had. And so my thinking is less of that persistence. And I absolutely, I'm not a yogi by any means or someone who's well-trained or schooled in the yogic practice of karma yoga.
Right.
So I'm not speaking from that perspective. I'm just coming from a kind of emptiness place. And
right.
I agree that it is more about service. Karma to me means it purely means action and or resultant action, and that karma, when it's embraced by people within Buddhism or Hinduism and externally by people that just think they know about it, it's oftentimes an excuse or a harmful projection of, as you spoke earlier about how, you know, their bad karma, look what happened to them. It's just a negative projection of violence. It's just another projection of violence. So that's all I have to say about that. But it's just another maybe perspective of looking at karma. It's really being no more existent than anything else.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tara. Thanks so much for sharing that perspective. I really appreciate your, and also about the about religion too, veganism as a religion. Okay. Well, it's actually about 7:30. We're going to have to wrap up our call for the month. Thanks for joining us, Tara, and thanks for joining us, everyone. We have I think at this point. There's actually one other person who had Eric. It's I think maybe from outside the country. 339-823-54.
Veronica.
Who's
this? Is Veronica.
Who?
Hi, this is Veronica, and it's actually.
You're like 3 o'clock in the morning in France. Oh my goodness.
Yes, and I sort of fell asleep, and I missed part of the call. I tried to stay awake, and I sort of fell asleep and missed part of the call. It's actually 4:30 in the morning here. But I missed you guys so much that I really wanted to be on the call and at least be able to say hi and I was hoping to sort of give you a quick perspective of what's going on as far as veganism in France and how much work needs to be done and talk about, of course, the work is that being translated in French at last, all these things. And I don't know if you have a minute for me or if I
Well, we're kind of, I have to kind of be sensitive to the time because we have, like in the States, I mean, I understand for you it's 3:30 in the morning, so you're really hardcore here. But we on the East Coast of the United States, it's now 10:30 at night, and a lot of people need to get up in the morning. So I think, maybe like 1 minute,
but maybe next month we can
hear a little bit more. But since you've been so wonderful to actually wait up here, it's too bad to. Yeah, so you're in France. Just tell everybody that Veronique lived for many years in Los Angeles, and we've met her a number of times. She's a World Peace Society facilitator, wonderful blogger and writer, and I was back in France, her native country, and the World Peace Society is coming out in French 2015. So, just briefly, maybe anything you'd like to share?
Well, yeah, just briefly, sort of, because I've been trying to, you know, get in touch with activists over here, and fortunately for me, I knew one I had met at the Animal Rights Conference back in 2011, was French, and we happened to be living in the, I happened to live now in the town next to hers, and we got back in touch, and she put me in contact with all the activists in the region. So it's been wonderful to be able to connect with new people, and at the same time, sad to miss a lot of people I knew until then, and also to be able to sort of observe what's going on in France as far as veganism and as far as the animal rights. In the south here, it's mostly a lot of things is done about bullfighting, obviously.
Bullfighting down there.
Anti-resection. The principal concerns for people around here are bullfighting and anti-resection. So I've been actually participating in a pretty rough demo recently against bullfighting where we had tear gas, and you know the police is can get pretty aggressive. They will tear gas you, and they will. It's like Occupy Wall Street. But I did go, and I was able. And the reason I went also is not just for that, but also because I wanted to see what the state of veganism is as far as activists are concerned in the mind of people themselves. And what I discovered is that there are a lot of vegans, but there are also a lot of people who are not there yet and have, unfortunately, still have a lot of brainwashing around nutritional issues, just like, you know, we did in the United States. But it's even more ingrained. It's even more...
Yeah, I think in France,
culturally,
it's really intense.
Even more culturally, I would say, ingrained. I mean, you even have bull meat here.
Right.
And you know there are things on the menu here that would make you cringe, to be honest.
Oh, I know. You got horse meat and snails
horse
and pigeons and all
the things of, that would make Americans cringe, you know, in general.
Right. I think you know. Quite honestly, we're going to have to wrap it up here because we went to get to this conspiracy thing too. So, but it's great. I'm so thrilled that you were able to join our call and give us a little insight into what you're doing there, and help the police. I know the police out here are getting worse too. Actually,
I can't wait to get a word per se in French because this is going to be my tool to really try to make people understand, because I was thinking maybe I could translate a few things here and there, but I'm not a very good translator. I can write, I can read, but just fast translating is pretty hard for me. And so Frail Stefan is working so hard on it.
Oh, I know, yes, right.
And I can't wait to read the French version and be able to spread the message around about this book, because to me this is the best tool I've ever known to spread veganism and make them really understand the word, the meaning of the word. Some of them don't even use the word. They don't even know the word. Some of them, they will use the word vegetarian, you know, for plant-based, or they will use the word crucivore, which means, you know, eating plants, basically. But they don't have, the word vegan is not really in the vocabulary that much yet. Unless you've been an activist who's been, you know, around the world a little bit, like my friend Joelle, who's been to America, obviously, and has lived in America as well. And so she knows exactly what I'm talking about. And she knows offers, she knows people that we know. But for most people here, a lot of things that we have in America is totally foreign. I mean, you cannot even find a vegetarian restaurant, let alone a vegan one.
I can imagine. We're going to have to wrap it up.
Thanks so much again.
Yeah, appreciate it. All right, well, listen, thanks so much for joining us, and we're sending our love to you in France. Really great to hear your voice. Thanks again, Brian. Thanks. Yeah, bye-bye. So thanks, everyone. It's really past time for us to say adieu. adieu, and bonsoir and good night and so forth. And so just to remind everyone, between now and the next meeting we'll be having in November on the third Thursday, which is November 13th, which is going to be our, I think, a wonderful meeting we're going to have, because between now and then we'll be making some tours and doing some lectures in various cities. But stay in touch in the meantime. If you have any other comments or questions, don't forget we do have the World Peace Diet Facebook group, the World Peace Diet, community forum, where you're always encouraged to talk about the any issues that you may be having and any ideas and insights you may have. We look forward to our paths crossing again somewhere. And there is also, I just wanted to mention a movie, another movie that I have a small part in, actually. It's called Animals and the Buddha, which just premiered actually in Oakland a couple of weeks ago, making the connections between veganism and Buddhism, which hasn't been done. So that's another something you might want to look into. There's going to be free CDs of that available as well. You can go to Dharma Voices for Animals if you're interested in getting a copy of that DVD, Animals and the Buddha. So much love to you all. Thanks again for joining us. The time, as usual, has kind of flown by. Madeline, yes, send your love. We're going to wrap it up here, and I'll get the recording of this up as soon as we can. And in the meantime, much love to you all. Thanks again. Just know that we are part of an awakening of human awareness here on planet Earth to create a world where we are actually fulfilling our purpose on this Earth and creating a world that reflects our true nature of compassion and freedom and creativity. Thanks again, all of you. You are the inspiration of our lives, and I think of many other people as well. And have a beautiful month. We'll talk to you hopefully next month. In the meantime, I'm going to play a little bit here one of our favorite songs, the Duck Song. Enjoy. Thanks. Thank you.